This week's episode of Legends of Gotham is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/Gotham. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Again, that link is audibletrial.com/Gotham.
I can still come with you if you want me to.
No. Wouldn't be right.
No, of course.
I'll be fine, Alfred. You don't have to worry.
Who said I was worried?
I'll be back before dark. I've been on this hike before, you know.
Not without your father.
How's the bedroom? Son of a mother bitch. Welcome to Legends of Gotham, where we talk about Vox's hit series, Gotham, set in the world of Batman. I'm Bill Meads.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeSimone.
And I have a new mixing board, so I was playing with the effects and stuff. I can do robot voice.
Oy vey.
My name is Brainiac. I am here for young Bruce Wayne to take him to the Divergence crossover in DC that they're doing this summer. How are you doing, Anne-Marie?
I'm hanging in there. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing great. I am doing fantabulous. I'm a little scared of what this episode will bring, just in general.
Don't be scared. It'll just bring you to the bedroom.
Yeah, well... Whoa.
Whoa.
No, but we've been having some technical issues. So live viewers who, by the way, if you don't know, we stream this every Tuesday night live at 8:30 p.m. EST at youtube.universebox.com. But live viewers, it's possible you might have a couple interruptions. We have been having some crashes lately. But I went through and tried to do a bunch of stuff today to kind of hopefully keep us from having the crashes. Let us know if there are any weird technical things going on the video feed, in the chat room.
If there's anyone there.
Definitely
appreciate it. Please say hello if you're in the chat room.
But because we had a mix up with the link and stuff before we started to.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess we should probably go ahead and get started talking about this week's episode of Gotham. Anne-Marie, you want to read the rhyming, riddling episode summary?
Sure, why not?
Sweet.
Okay.
Do you want the effects you do it?
No, please, no effects. Please.
No effects? That's a good band. Okay, I'll stop with that.
For our audio listeners, I was giving him a death stare. Fix it.
Okay, there you go.
Can young Bruce Wayne move on from his dad? Yes, but his little spill drives him mad. How many glands must Dr. Crane take? Enough to make all he says shake. Where is Fish Mooney? She doesn't know. Will she climb up or stay stranded below? If fear is the edge, then what lies in the shadows? Jonathan finds out in this week's The Scarecrow.
The Scarecrow! Yep!
Wrong Scarecrow.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit.
Had a brain. Well, gosh, Dorothy. What'd you think of this week's episode, Anne-Marie?
I really liked it, actually.
Did you?
Yeah. It went a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
It went a lot, and I like when they go a lot of places.
Yeah, I definitely liked it, and I don't think I have this in the notes any, so I'll go ahead and say it now. But I really like that they were able to kind of flesh out this villain over two episodes, just like they did with the Electrocutioner.
Yes.
Although I think the Electrocutioner, like the first his first episode was the stronger one, and the second one was kind of like just wrapping it up. Where this one, the first one was kind of setting it up, and the second one was the stronger one, I thought.
Right.
Far as that plot line, anyway.
For the Scarecrow stuff, yeah, I think that was definitely stronger. And yeah, I actually felt like good about this character being killed because we're killing everybody, apparently.
Yeah, and it made sense with what he was doing in the story, too.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
Yeah.
But Scarecrow, Dr. Crane, all that. One of the big themes, and I thought it was interesting that they picked the Scarecrow to be one of the first like big Batman villains to bring in here, is one of the themes that's been going on the entire series so far is that fear tells you where the edge is. I think it's dropped by Harvey Bullock, I think in the first episode. It's in the pilot. I know that much.
No, fear tells you where the – no, that's Jim. He's telling Bruce fear is a good thing. Fear tells you where the edge is. No, it was like the second episode.
Yeah, they've definitely been playing with Jim's recklessness in terms of his mission. You know, I think of like the balloon man where he like jumps to get the balloon guy, and you know, he's made a lot of reckless decisions and crossed a lot of powerful people.
Yes.
Trying to clean up Gotham, which I think definitely is a good thing, but it definitely puts him at risk. It puts his loved one, his fiance, at risk, especially.
Yeah, she's really a fiance anymore.
And kind of ruined that relationship,
yeah,
really.
Yeah,
because I mean, he put her in direct danger, and she—that's basically why she left. more or less. But I think definitely that Dr. Crane's whole experiment and death probably helped teach Jim a little bit that fear is good and it can protect you from yourself and your environment. Because, I mean, Dr. Crane, he just went walking into those bullets because he didn't have a fear of death anymore. He didn't
fear anything.
Plus, his mission was satisfied, so he didn't fear failure either. And, I mean, he just didn't feel fear in general.
Yeah, none.
But I think if nothing else, maybe that'll show Jim. And you could kind of see him mulling things over when he was watching Jonathan Crane in the bed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That, you know, right and dead is still dead and you can't fix Gotham City while you're dead.
No, so, you can't do anything if you're dead because you're dead.
So maybe he should be a little bit more aware of his fear to kind of show him where the edge is, and maybe then he'll live long enough to save Gotham.
Yeah, really. It's definitely – you could – actually, I mean, Jim did have a little bit of fear in this episode with Miss Gorkin.
Yes.
Well, we're just going to call her Miss Gorkin, whatever.
Hashtag Gorkins.
Hashtag Gorkins. Because he didn't want her like any PDA in the office.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying. We'll come back to that.
Definitely.
So.
Anything else on, Dr. Crane in general? Did you have more?
I think I have a little more Dr. Crane later.
Okay. Well, you had a big question mark, and it didn't have anything to do with the Riddler.
No. Fish. What the is going on? Where is she? Last thing we saw, she was charging at some dude.
Yeah, and there was
ammo and didn't shoot her.
And there was all sorts of speculation that he was like he knew her, he was a relative or something. But I think that's pretty much
squashed.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it was just like thrown in a cage, like basically a big giant zoo sized cage, which was weird.
Or like some weird like underground prison.
Actually, I don't know if this will be a compliment or an insult. Reminded me of in Dog Boy.
Oh yeah, it did totally. If you guys don't know, I write a series of book called Dog Boy Adventures, dogboyadventures.com. And in the latest book, Eye of the Scarab, there's actually a big battle arena that's set up just like the jail cell here, where with a bunch of superpowered teenagers.
Yeah, when that scene started, I was like,
yeah, this seems familiar because it's like in the book, it's set up in a grid, like with the pillars and everything, just like this.
It was exactly it. So it was really weird. So the boss man guy doesn't even look remotely scary.
No.
He looks like I could take him. He's like, I have a blade. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, I have seen Fish kill with less. Like, she could kill you with her shoe. She could kill you with her bare hands, which is what I actually expected her to do. I don't know. The guys protecting him, I don't know what he had on them.
Yeah.
That blade wasn't the only thing keeping him alive. There had to be some other thing.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, if a blade's the only thing that's keeping you the boss man, then you don't sit in the middle of a row there with people behind you, like, without being able to see them. Like, I'd constantly, be edging along the walls.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what he was
doing,
though.
Gotta watch your back.
That's what he was doing, though. He was in that one little sort of cubby with his back to the wall.
Yeah, and I guess he did have those guys. Yeah,
he had the guys, but why were the guys protecting him? Mm-hmm. What's he really doing?
They weren't doing a great job because, I mean, Fish.
Well, he called her over, though.
Yeah.
And she just took the blade and bye-bye. Yeah, but
then she was on them before they had a chance to even react to her stabbing him.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I love how she just like took over. She stabbed him, let him die. She's like, my name's Fish Mooney. This is my now.
I'm the boss now.
I'm the boss. You'll respect my authority. why we're going to all these horrible references tonight. But, you know, just as I was starting to be like, okay, this is the old Fish coming back, not scared of anything. Just going to flash some bling while I'm talking.
Yeah, a little bit.
They threw the chicken. They're like, she's back. And I'm like, are we supposed to know her already or something? And Fish actually looked scared when she was like, they took my eyes. I was like, okay, I'm scared.
What is the deal with this show and eyes? Cause I have a phobia of like having my eyes damaged or losing my sight. And this show, like every other episode, somebody's getting stabbed through the eye or their eyes taken out or ripped out of their skulls or something. It's not fun. I don't like it.
Hold on to your adrenal glands. I gotta say.
I see. I don't have a fear of my adrenal. Actually, maybe it's like I'm being experimented on by Dr. Crane. He's bringing my worst fear to light here.
Stephanie.
No, but one thing that Fish's situation it brought to mind to several people I saw online today, and I thought it made a good bit of sense, is it seemed like the same kind of facility that the comic book version of Bane, the character Bane, was brought up in. You know, just kind of like an underground prison, you know, dark and dank and everything, where that's the type of environment that Bane grew up in. And we have seen the Viper, which is the precursor to the Venom drug that Bane gets, already in Gotham. So, I mean, it would kind of be cool for like an end of the season, like kind of cliffhanger, like Fish and Baby Bang or whatever, like break out of that prison and like head back towards Gotham or something. That could be fun.
That could be very interesting.
Or Bane's the one who kills Fish Mooney. But I mean, that feels almost that like has it has to be the Penguin.
It has to be the Penguin. Has to be. Speaking of the Penguin,
there was and I mean, it's just because we know where these characters are going, a monumental meeting in this episode, and that was the Penguin and the Riddler finally running into each other and meeting up.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it was a nice moment. They did give it its due respect and its due complexity because of the historic nature of the moment. And they at least it could have been just like a glancing passing two ships passing the night kind of thing, but they at least tried to make it a little interesting too. Which
wasn't
going
to be two ships passing in the night with Nigma. Nobody's getting past him.
Yeah,
that's what I love about him.
Well, I definitely loved the dark overtones that in his speech right at the end there, because it was at first it was the Nigma trying to get close to Kristen Kringle that confronted Penguin, but by the end of it was the Enigma who hid all those body parts in the old ME's locker.
I love that he made a Penguin joke.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that was
clutch.
That was like shots fired too, for sure. Like I think Penguin just earned an enemy, and we know how Ed treats his enemies. So
I just put a big heart and said it makes a Penguin joke. Like that was my note. My camera's not warmed up.
Okay, no, so it's not.
I was going to say we didn't do that.
Oh,
wait for it. Waiting for it.
For the camera to warm up. Okay. Yeah. See, just big a big heart there
makes Penguin joke.
No, but I really liked it, and I also like that. Here, let me turn off that music there. But I also really dug that Ed was fascinated by the Penguin. Like he's been with every one of these eccentric villains we've seen all season. You know, he's so fascinated by these big theatrical villains. And I don't know, he's probably going to take some inspiration from them somewhere along the way.
You know, like reading that medical journal paper or whatever.
Oh, yeah. He was just like, when he found out there was a second subject.
He's
yeah.
Like, ooh, let me see.
He was just so excited.
Yeah.
When he wasn't trying to hit on Jim's girlfriend or like suggest that he might.
I love that. That was so cute. Especially because Jim is the only person basically on Nigma's side. And that, but you could tell he was just like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, but I definitely liked it. And I also thought it was kind of funny that the way Penguin treated Ed the Riddler was kind of the way that Fish treated Penguin at the earlier in the season, like suffer no fools kind of thing, you know, which was pretty cool.
Should be interesting. Okay, so the fear vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he was really successful? Like really successful? Did he do that all right?
Yeah, I think it probably was. Yeah, like for him anyway, definitely not for his son.
Well, that was actually my next thing is, you know, he even says because he'd already given Jonathan the first injection. Okay, once you start the regimen, you have to finish it or there's going to be consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And then even Jonathan's pointing out, he's like, you're giving me too much. He's like, oh, no, you'll be fine. He's like, okay, I think you'd be better off not finishing the regimen versus ODing him on it, basically, which is what he did. And ta-da. That's what happened.
Well, I'd imagine it's a situation where it's kind of like immersion therapy, like, you know, immerse yourself in the fear to absolve yourself of it. And so I think Jonathan Crane's definitely going to have a much harder time with it. I think if nothing else, he's probably going to come out of this with a big tolerance to the fear toxin, if nothing else, which will come in handy probably later in life when he throws on a mask.
Is it just me or was it a little bit creepy that the headmaster knew exactly what was going on before asked?
I thought it was a little weird too that she just automatically gave up her former colleague, you know, like just immediately like, oh, you mean there's dead people, right? And they took the glands, right? Yeah, yeah.
It's been 3 weeks. There's been fear. They've taken these glands. They're just like, whoa, crazy lady. Yes.
Here's his address.
Yeah, basically. So that was really a little odd to me. Mm-hmm. I also thought that apparently taking away fear also takes away your sanity, because just because you're not scared of the bullets doesn't mean you should be shooting at the cops and walking towards them.
Yeah, well, like I said, I also think – because, I mean, Dr. Crane seemed – if for as crazy and as cruel as he was, he seemed a pretty logical fellow. So, you know, one, he didn't have a fear of death anymore, so who cares? And two, he understood the situation he was in. There was no way he was getting out of there alive. The best shot for his work to continue on, which was his main goal throughout all of this, was to, you know – develop that anti-fear vaccine or whatever, was to let his son live and maybe continue on the work down the road. Because, I mean, obviously he had his son pretty well brainwashed.
Oh, yeah.
Concerning this whole project.
Yeah.
For sure.
Jaime's in the chat and he's like, exposition lady, fear is good for you.
Hi, Jaime. Anyone else in there?
Nah, that's it.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Well, you know what that means.
Ooh.
What?
Ready?
It's time to look at this Joker.
Look at this Joker. We're going to look at these Jokers. And that's ta-da.
So, okay. First off,
spoilers.
Yeah, I would skip ahead a couple minutes if you're concerned about spoilers, if you didn't see the preview for next week's episode.
Or if you haven't figured out what we're going to say.
But yeah, as you know, we've been keeping track of clues, hints, references to the Joker all this season, trying to suss out who the Joker might be. And, you know, so we've been going through and, you know, the pilot episode, there was that comedian and then there was the smile graffiti and on down the line. And we had a lot of good leads.
We had some really good things.
We had some duds too.
We did have some serious duds
along the way, and we
wasn't there one
going.
Where it was like a trash can or something.
It was like the color scheme, purple and green. And then we get to this week, the Scarecrow, and we have the promo for this week. You know what? I'm just going to play it, and we're actually even going to play it on the stream. Hopefully YouTube doesn't take us off, and then
tell anyone.
Okay, so here we go. The Penguin.
Fish Mooney.
Catwoman. Two-Face, the Riddler,
Mr. Zazz.
You've met Gotham's most sinister. The next villain is no joke. And then we get
the smile.
The Joker face, kind of similar to the iconography and everything they used for the Dark Knight movie. Like the posters and stuff for that, where it's like the Joker face bleeding through.
I love it.
So, yep, think we're done here. look at this Joker page, which you can find by going to legendsofgotham.com and clicking look at this Joker up at the top.
It's pretty much done.
On the way out.
Probably has. Well, and then, I mean, the actor is even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No more songs. No more Joker speculation.
But I wanna.
Okay.
Can't we keep the page and just like literally look at the Joker every episode?
Next week. We'll do it one more time.
We have to, because it'll be revealed.
Just for old time's sake. That's probably it, though.
Sake, yeah,
and it. Also the actor who you can follow at Cameron Monaghan, which we'll have the link to his Twitter in the show notes at legendsofgotham.com too, tweeted out, you should really watch Gotham next week. I'm not clowning around. So yeah, very clever, Cameron. And welcome
clever.
Here's another for the video viewers, a picture of the smiley face there. So, yeah, look at this Joker. Whoa. No longer.
I was like, that's a really big picture of it.
Yeah, but let's see. Cameron, actually, I noticed, has been in a few things. He was in Click. He was in Vampire Academy. He's been in stuff.
He's been in long.
He was in Terriers with Donald Logan.
Oh!
Like Raymond James.
Oh.
He was Chad on Malcolm in the Middle. Interesting.
Which one's Chad?
So he has a history with Fox. I don't know who Chad was on Malcolm in the Middle. Let me look. This is called Let's Google This. This is also another segment we do.
Maybe we should start that.
This is what we're replacing Look at This Joker with.
Chad Sleepover. Oh, we just want pictures of Chad.
Oh, there he is. Little redhead guy here. I'll show the desktop again here.
Oh.
Yeah.
He was like one of the friends.
Yeah, I recognize him now. Yeah, that makes sense. I like it, though. He seems like he'll be good. He has a good laugh in the other promo, too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, real quick before we get back into the discussion, I thought it would be worth it to kind of go through real quick and just tell you a little bit about the classic Scarecrow origin, just for contrast yes. with what we had on Gotham here. And we'll have the link to the wiki page at legendsofgotham.com, too. But in his first appearance, Scarecrow is introduced as Jonathan Crane, a professor of psychology who turns to crime after he is fired. He's an expert in the psychology of fear, and he fires a gun in his classroom full of students to illustrate a point, to scare them, to make a point. The only thing revealed about his early life is that as a child, he had liked to frighten birds, like penguins. Ostracized by his fellow professors for his appearance and reclusiveness, he turned to crime to make himself part of the social elite.
Uh-huh.
So that's the original Jonathan Crane. I think in the more modern versions, there was some stuff with his family where with his father being a psychologist, too. But that was the original OG Scarecrow origin. And I know – I believe that there was a story, Scarecrow Year One, a couple years ago, and they named his parents this episode after those that version of his parents as kind of an homage, which I thought was kind of cool.
That's good.
Okay, so
chug.
Sorry, I had to take a drink there. But Bruce kind of took it upon himself to, well, I mean, kind of fell into it a little too. But moving on past his dad,
he fell in this into episode. It. Sorry,
I thought the Bruce Wayne story in this episode was really fun. It was just like a nice.
I don't know if I was. I'd say fun.
Well, I mean, it was nice.
It was character building.
Definitely. For sure. But it was just, I thought it was just a nice, simple story about Bruce finally accepting Alfred as his new dad and letting Alfred fill that position in his life.
Letting Alfred take care of him instead of just bossing him around, really.
Yeah, and I also thought it was nice. And I mean, obviously, Alfred waiting at the top of the cliff was awesome.
It was hilarious.
But I was thinking back this week to the episode with Tommy Elliot where he was bullying Bruce and stuff. And, I've been complaining the past few weeks about Alfred being maybe a little too hard on Bruce, maybe trying to isolate him.
Yeah.
But I really think, especially with how he treated Bruce when he saw him climbing up the hill and everything, I think he's just trying to toughen him up. And I think maybe part of the reason Alfred is doing this is because he regrets horribly what happened to Thomas Wayne, and he doesn't want the same sort of thing to ever happen to Bruce.
I can see that.
So I think he's kind of pushing him towards, being very self-reliant and tough and no nonsense. And it's probably going to be part of the reason he lets Bruce go to, like, Tibet and learn martial arts. And
I think by that point he's old enough to
Victorian England and team up with Sherlock to learn detecting. No, that won't happen.
I love the fact when he's like, just stop for a pie and a pint halfway up.
Oh, what did he also called him Cheeky Monkey. Yep. Which
would you
was
like a cup of tea, Cheeky Monkey?
But I also really liked when Bruce was down at the bottom of the hill and everything, they kind of this was kind of the first moment where we see that Batman, it doesn't give a crap about injuries. Like, he will patch himself up as much as he needs to accomplish his goal. And you can see that with Bruce doing the splint thing and just like.
Is my tiara distracting you?
No, not at all.
Because you just keep looking at it.
Well, it's a tiara. You're supposed to, right?
Sorry.
Everybody likes tiaras. Yeah, but I really like the Bruce and Alfred story. The Bruce and Alfred story.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba.
The Bruce and Alfred story.
Oh, here we go again.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I don't even know. Are we on to my point now? Oh, that actually hurt.
We are on to your point.
Okay, it's on to my point. Penguins Club opening.
Oswald's.
Cheers to Oswald's.
Here, I should probably.
Cheers to how do we do this?
Cheers.
Cheers to Oswald.
We're the only ones who did cheers to Oswald because no one was there.
Yep. Okay. The song, they were like, no more heroes anymore was the words.
Oh, nice.
I was like, that's awesome. That's kind of fun. That's kind of good. And then there was the punk dude with the hair.
Yeah.
Who let him in?
I like that it was a punk club. Like,
I don't think it was meant to be a punk club.
Well, he is kind of like a very, like, I don't know, like My Chemical Romance kind of penguin, though. So, I mean, it makes sense that he had that kind of a band there versus Fish Mooney, where it was more like classical, like.
A nightclub.
Nightclub, yeah.
Interesting. I don't know. I felt like it was like the band's, like, roadie just jamming out till people actually got there.
You think so?
I don't know. This is things that I'm thinking of on the spot.
There is.
Umbrella symbol, of course. Of course, the umbrella.
Although I think people were disappointed that he didn't call it the Iceberg Lounge, but I'm sure it'll get there.
Well, right now it's Oswald's, but it's going to have to get revamped at least once because
obviously
no one came.
Yeah, the first remodel didn't work.
Yeah, but I mean, he got the things fresh off the press and he's like, we open in 10 hours. And I'm like, nobody can make plans in 10 hours.
He needs that. What's that guy's name from Kitchen Nightmares or whatever? He needs that guy to come in and be like, and revamp everything.
That would be funny.
Who, what's that
guy's
name?
I don't remember. That wasn't one that I want. Kitchen Nightmares.
The Mad English Gentleman.
The Mad English Gentleman. They're all Mad English Gentlemen. shouldn't Falcone have at least been there, though? To
You'd
see?
Think.
Maybe he comes by later after Maroni's come in and threatened.
Yeah.
Maybe they worked that out over their cigar.
I don't know. I guess they probably – no, actually, they might – they'll pick up that night, won't they? Because so maybe Maroni showed up a little early.
I'm sure he
versus
did.
When the party was supposed to start. Because, yeah, doesn't Leslie ask Jim to go out to the circus that night? And that's what next episode is.
Is it that night? I thought it was the next day.
Oh, was it the next day?
I thought it was the next day.
I could be
– but either way.
Regardless, his friend Jim didn't come.
His friend Jim did not come because – And I think he would have if the penguin wouldn't have caused harm to that other cop 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what kind of shook up their relationship a little bit for sure.
Yeah. That made things go a little south.
They are no longer bros.
They are no longer bros. So.
They are no longer bros. Sorry. I'm gonna stop it with the effect.
No, you're not. This is the rest of our lives now.
Okay. So, I called this last week. I said, you know, that whole kissing in the GCPD thing, all well and good until Leslie thinks you're right, Jim, and she goes for the medical examiner's position, and then it's an office romance. And
there we are.
Yeah, I have bad news bears. I think Jim definitely has a problem with it just because he's been fighting so hard to be
respected.
Respected within the bullpen. And
why is it called a bullpen?
I don't know.
Okay. Maybe that'll be next week's. This is what will we Google.
Yeah, this is what we Google.
This is when we Google.
But, you know, he's been fighting for respect and trying to, you know, set an agenda. And, you know, playing kissy face in the hallways does not do much to – especially with these – with cops. Because, I mean, cops are very – they respect machismo. They don't respect young love.
No, not at all. Not that they're very young.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've even got – pieces of dialogue between some of the other cops where most of them aren't even in love with their spouses anymore.
I know. They're not exactly faithful.
So you can see why Jim has the concerns and everything. At the same time, you can see why Leslie is kind of all about, like, just messing with them. Like,
oh, yeah. You could totally tell that whole last thing with the whole inviting him to the circus. Well, fine then. Don't be like that. I'll be sly.
But I know in that scene and also in the scene with Harvey, there were a couple lines that kind of indicated that Harvey says office relationships always end in tears. Mm-hmm. Like I was kind of thinking, I wonder since they're hitting this plot point so hard, if her PDA in the GCPD is going to put her in danger somewhere down the line. Like maybe, I don't know, if Barbara makes a crazy bad turn and shows up in the GCPD and Alvarez is like, hey, did you know Jim's dating?
I think Alvarez likes him, but yeah, somebody
the medical
will say
examiner
it.
Or something. Then that's going to put Leslie in danger.
Yes,
but you liked it though, right?
Liked what? The PDA?
The PDA?
No, I'm like, anti the PDA.
Oh, you're anti the PDA.
I'm pro Gorkin, anti PDA. Can I be pro Gorkin and anti PDA?
Are you pro Gorkin? The kin side of the Gorkin leaving Jim at the end of their date at the beginning of the episode, especially if they were going to the same place in the morning. It would have saved on cab fare.
That was my thing. I was like, apparently the third date, but what happened to the second? Because we missed the second one, is when you go back to the apartment. I was like, I didn't know that. Just nobody passed that rule along.
Gotham City rules.
Gotham City rules. Third date, you get to see the apartment. Yeah, I mean, I kind of liked how she did that because she didn't want to talk work the whole night.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, she should have just been like, hey, let's try the next day. And then surprise! Actually, no, I guess it's
well, better. Maybe after the circus, he'll get to see how she's decorated her bedroom. And
yes, because that's all that matters is the decorating.
Now, one little thing I noticed just as we're wrapping up here and everything with the discussion. I thought it was interesting that this version of the Scarecrow's origin sort of parallels, at least the reasons for Batman's origin or Bruce's origin or for the Batman persona. Because as we all know, Batman,
oh, yeah.
gets besieged by either a bat in the study or several bats in a cave and gets a fear of them. So when he's looking for a symbol to turn himself into to strike fear into the hearts of the weak and cowardly and criminal, he chooses the bat. And now we see that Jonathan Crane, whenever he decides to go full scarecrow,
he's scared of scarecrows.
Yeah, he's scared of scarecrows now because of this horrific experience. Who knows how long he's going to be in that bed looking at ghastly, ghostly scarecrow guys.
They're terrifying.
I know,
like,
right?
I mean, the picture.
I can put it up here. Yeah, the one we use for our title screen.
That's scary.
It is. Very scary. That's straight out of a nightmare.
Like, when I was rewatching this, I was like, please don't let any of the children look over. They're going to be terrified.
No one
will sleep again.
I really like that effect, though, they did for all the fear toxin stuff.
Yeah, the fear toxin was pretty cool.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting that it paralleled Batman's a little bit, for sure.
Okay, is it just me, but I thoroughly enjoyed the Maroni and Falcone's afternoon at the manor.
Oh, yeah, that was nice.
That was precious. They had sandwiches. There was a walk in the gardens. They had a cigar. There was a judge being tortured and filmed behind basically a glass window.
It was good.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Lots of, you know, friendships were made.
You know, that house was a lot bigger in this episode than it seemed in previous episodes.
Well, we haven't needed to see the entire thing.
I really like that staircase they were coming down to.
I want the house. Mm-hmm. I want the garden. I'll just take any of it. Someone give me a wing. Oh, hello, Gamery Camera.
You know, speaking of that, though, I thought it was nice that I enjoyed how Falcone was dealing with Penguin. He was like, okay, now that we're on the other side of
this
of our thing. Whole plan, we need to make sure you're professional and you're thinking about the business because that's what's most important here. Yeah, I'm gonna
I'll take care of you.
I'll save your life or whatever, but you know, focus on the business, and then your life's worth something.
Right,
know?
Exactly. Got to make the money to be worth the money.
Yeah, I thought it was very very cool though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's see. Out of 300 milliliters of ground up adrenal glands. How many milliliters of ground up adrenal glands would you give this episode, Anne-Marie? Nice even number, 300 milliliters.
265.
265? Why?
Because it was a pretty awesome episode. There was a lot. excuse me. I liked where all the stories are going. I liked the stuff that was wrapped up pretty. The stuff that's set up was set up kind of freaky.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see where we go next week, especially now that we got – I mean, it really would be like a 320 if the little bit of Scarecrow – or not Scarecrow, Joker was actually in the episode. Mm-hmm. But since it was outside the episode, it's not included in the number.
Yeah.
Kind of interested to see where they go with all that.
Definitely.
Next week's going to be – tough.
I'm really glad that if nothing else, we're getting at least a couple scenes with him in the next episode too. But okay, as for me, I'm gonna say 280 milliliters of ground up adrenal glands because I really
losing the fear.
Well, I really liked it. I didn't like it as much as last week's episode, but I thought it was a fitting. And I actually liked the Scarecrow story more this week. But I thought the other parts of the episode, like the Fish Mooney moment or plotline and stuff, just seemed a little out of left field. I'm sure it's going somewhere.
Oh, it's going somewhere.
But yeah, that and I don't know. I'm almost there with being fully on board the Gorkins bandwagon, but I'm still trying to warm up to Leslie just a little bit.
Gorkins.
I'm like the cold-hearted beast who just won't. I'm a robot. I do not like chips. I do not like Gorkins.
You do
but
not like
I'm
chips.
Getting there.
It sounded like you said you don't like chips.
I don't like chips.
Chips are evil.
No, I actually love chips and I can't have them. Okay, before we get to the news and listener feedback and everything, we want to take a moment to thank Audible.com for sponsoring this week's episode of Legends of Gotham. Now, if you don't know what Audible is, it's a service. You go there, you sign up, you get a credit a month. You can get any audiobooks, radio dramas, some premium podcasts from people like Ricky Gervais. Audio entertainment right to your ear holes through your phone, through your car, like
your
Ford Sync computer. I'm pretty sure some of those smartwatches probably have an Audible app, maybe.
Are those even out yet?
Yeah, I think a couple of them. Like, there's an Android one or something. But
interesting.
You can probably listen to Audible on it.
I'd imagine.
And, you know, it does cost – it's a membership service. So
it is a membership.
There is a monthly fee, but if you want to check it out to see
–
If you'd like to pick it up for free, the listeners of Legends of Gotham podcast, Audible's offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you an opportunity to check out the service. Now, we always like to do a recommendation for these. And the past couple weeks, I've been actually recommending – because I have the Dog Boy Adventures series I mentioned earlier. We have three of the books up now on Audible. And this week I'm recommending Dog Boy Danger on Liberty Pier because it has some pretty scary moments.
It does have some scary moments.
So, Anne-Marie, you want to tell us a little about that?
Hold on, I'm opening the page.
That's fine.
Okay. Dog Boy, a.k.a. Bronson Black, is Cult of City's 13-year-old superhero. Mm-hmm. After defeating the Guild of Thieves, things have settled down for the mangy masked crime fighter until he sees local businessman Dexter Stonehouse gunned down on Liberty Pier. When it appears an old family friend may have been involved, Dog Boy jumps into action to unmask the killer. Does he have the guts to expose the man from his past? Or will he ignore the evidence to learn more about his strange powers?
And I just realized this with the new audio setup. We can actually – I'll play you a little clip of it.
Oh.
Chapter 1, Hunted.
This is Nathan Beatty, my reader.
His hand on his knife, Dog Boy hid in the shadows as a police car cruised
down
the
street. He does a really good job.
It was 20 minutes past 5 on a warm Saturday evening. Dog Boy was on his way to Liberty Pier to meet Mr. Horam, his boss at the old curiosity shop.
But yeah, he does all sorts of character voices and stuff too. We should probably change that sample to something more exciting, like then Dog Boy jumps off the building. And yeah. Yeah, it was just games setting the mood.
Little mood.
But yeah, you can check that out. Or any book you want.
Can
use your free credit on. And to do that, all you have to do is go to
audibletrial.com/Gotham.
To get your free audiobook. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Gotham. And we want to thank Audible for sponsoring this week's episode of Legends of Gotham.
Thank you, Audible.
Thanks. And now, on to the news.
News.
Okay, first up, the ratings. Now,
How?
A new series low.
Was something else going on? Was everybody still talking about Kanye?
I think probably.
Stupid Kanye.
But Gotham scored a series low of 1.8, down a tenth from last week's series low 1.9 adults 18 to 49. But the thing is, like, as far as like the commentary and stuff I've seen about Gotham this week online, like, there's never been a more popular episode than these past two episodes.
Exactly. So if you watch the show, you like the show. We just have to keep the people watching the show.
Yeah, I'm guessing new people aren't coming on, or people are watching something else or something. But the people who like the show are still liking the show, and we have a season two anyway, so who cares, right?
Whoop, whoop.
Now, we will have links to the promos for next week's episode in the show notes, but we're not going to play one here.
Because we already did.
Yeah, we already did one. Okay, so this one is pretty big, and I'll go ahead and let Anne-Marie take this story here.
I love you, Peter Petrelli.
Peter Petrelli.
I love you, Jess.
Yes.
Yay!
For people who might not have ever seen Heroes, why don't you?
Or Gilmore Girls. Milo Ventimiglia. I don't know. I can't pronounce it. I just know he's cute. He will be appearing as Jason Lennon, a.k.a. the Ogre, in upcoming episodes. Plural.
Nice.
Soon to start in the episode. It starts with episode 19.
Yeah, in the description.
Oh, that's the episode title was The Whispers?
Yeah, The Whispers,
okay,
episode 19.
And we just saw 15, so
and the
coming soon.
The episode description is handsome, or the character description, rather, is handsome, wealthy, and seductive. The Ogre is a serial killer who has been preying on the young women of Gotham for nearly a decade, luring them into his web and confronting them with a series of tests as he searches for his perfect mate. When the woman fails to live up to his impossible standard, Lennon disposes of them quickly and viciously. I almost feel like this is going to be like a Barbara thing.
Oh, but she has to have a baby first.
Possibly. She doesn't have to. This is Earth G. Anything can happen.
Oh, here we go. Look at him. He just.
Also, incidentally, a little bit of trivia. Victoria, who plays Renee Montoya on Gotham, starred in The Bedford Diaries with Milo, which was the series he did right before Heroes, I think, if I remember correctly. From my research.
Just your research.
My research.
This week's episode of Let Me Google That.
Yeah, and then we actually, speaking of Victoria,
she had an interview with the Hollywood Reporter. That's right. I'm just taking it from you. I'm taking the article. Basically, it was just an interview to find out or talk about how she feels about the strength and the whole Gaytham movement, I guess you would call it.
Yes.
Surrounding
which a
her
Lady
character.
Lady J on Twitter is the one who came up with the Gaytham.
She totally did.
Yeah, so we were there. We
followed
it.
Along. We joined in. We are pro the Gaytham. So it's how she had no idea. She actually went in blind, basically, to the first read-through.
Yeah.
And Aaron Richards came up to her and was like, love her! And she's like, what are you talking about? Because she hadn't had anything. She knew nothing.
Yeah.
She vowed not to read the comics so that basically, I guess, not to influence her character too much. She wanted to make it her own.
Yeah, which is good.
Which is fair. Which is good. Obviously, now she's reading them because there's a lot going on.
And also because she hasn't been in an episode in forever.
We're not going to talk about that. But what she said is when she was reading Gotham Central, I was like, oh my God, a Latina lesbian badass vigilante. Yes, please.
Yeah, actually, we have a copy of Gotham Central signed by Victoria right behind you.
I got it.
But,
give me the camera.
Yeah, she also did a really good interview with Comic Book Resources along the same lines. And both of those links will be in the show notes. So definitely check that out. So, yeah, I guess that's about it for the news. Now, next week, when you're done watching the episode and you're vomiting because of the disgusting things the new Joker has done.
Ew.
You know, wait until your stomach's kind of okay, your mouth's not quite so watery, and stumble down the hallway, falling against the walls as you go, fall down the stairs, land in front of your computer, pass out for 5 minutes, wake up, get on the computer, email us your thoughts at legendsofgotham@gmail.com.
You're grody.
Tweet us at Legends of Gotham. The Facebook is facebook.com/Legends of Gotham. And the voicemail number is 424-274-2352. Again, that's 424-274-2352. And a few of you did that. First of all, Bobby. Take it away, Bobby.
Bobby.
Hey, Bill and Amory, it's Bobby. Wasn't quite as impressed with this week as I was last week, but I think we all agreed that last week was a pretty damn good episode of television. There was one or two scenes this week in particular that just felt like disjointed and out of place to me. I tried to watch him once or twice and I just felt a little lost. I really don't care for the fish subplot. I'm not even one bit curious as to what's going on there. I just don't care. Then there was the meeting of Riddler and Penguin that they played up so much. And again, it just felt like not only, I don't know, just felt like out of place and it didn't work. Could have done without it.
Yeah, I can see that perspective, Bobby. I was almost there until Ed's sort of attitude change right at the end. That made it really interesting to me.
I liked when he was basically faced with, you know who I am, you know what I can do, and he basically gave him the finger.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Penguin.
And they did so well last week with the Scarecrow that what they did this week just felt like they were just meandering, like they could have just tied it up last week and done something different this week. Of course, I did like the few character moments we got from Bullock. He's always a shining moment for me. I like the dynamic they're playing up now between Jim and Leslie. It seems like there's already tension in Gorkinsville. But of course, the best part of this episode for me would probably be the Bruce and Alfred storyline and where they went there. Mm-hmm. I thought David, I believe his name is, did a really good job of portraying all of the emotions he had to portray in those scenes.
Yeah, he's just been a standout in this series in
general. He's getting better and better with every episode.
Probably one of the best, especially television child actors I've seen, definitely.
The one thing I thought they did miss is I really thought he was going to fall down a well and Alfred was going to come get him, you know, bats and whatnot. But I thought it was pretty fitting for them to be sitting there watching the sunrise because just like Jim told Bruce, there will be light. So while I wasn't that impressed, I thought there was a few pretty great scenes. So I'll give it 15 of 24 bloody adrenal glands.
Nice. Hi, guys.
The adrenal glands, I guess, was the arbitrary scale to beat.
Gotta love an adrenal gland.
Okay, and next up we have a voicemail from Andy over at our friend over at the Flash podcast, who, by the way, we will probably have a little announcement about something we're working on with him soonly, probably in the next week or so.
But woohoo!
Take it away, Andy.
Hi, guys. This is Andy from the Flash podcast, calling in to give my brief thoughts about last night's episode of Gotham that I just finished watching.
Hi.
This was one of the best episodes of the season. It's been getting better and better each week. And this week it was just phenomenal. I love Bruce's arc in the forest and all that. And seeing how they did the Scarecrow arc and how they kind of pretty much set up Jonathan Crane now to become, you know, the man he's supposed to become in the future. I feel so sorry for him, but, you know, that's what happens when you're a comic book character. So I really enjoyed that. Fish, I'm starting to enjoy Fish Mooney a lot more. And this week she was really cool. And I'm still not feeling the Leslie and Jim relationship too much. But I don't know.
Someone agrees with me.
Meh.
We will see what happens with that. You know, I like that better than him being with the disaster that is Barbara.
Everyone agrees with me on that point.
And yeah, I was overall really happy with this episode. Really starting to enjoy the show since the show came back from its hiatus. And yeah, I don't know if you guys have seen the trailer or not, but whoa.
Yep.
Next week's episode, whoa. So guys, thank you so much. Keep up the great work you do. And yeah, talk to you soon. Can't wait for the episode. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
And as always, check him out over at the Flash podcast if you're a fan of the Flash TV
Absolutely.
Show. He does great work over there.
Lots of good things.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Sorry. He does it without telling me, and then I sound like an idiot with the voiceovers.
It happens.
Whatever.
Okay, next up is Michael Lucero. Take it away, Michael.
Hey, Bill and Anne-Marie. This is Michael. Hey. So, good episode all in all. I really like the pattern of villains' arcs carrying over from past episodes. If anything, I kind of wish the show was a bit more serialized, that the villains' arcs could go on for more than two episodes at a time. But I guess we are getting that with Penguin and Riddler, so that's good enough for me. Mm-hmm. I really loved Oswald and Ed's meeting. I really want that scene to go somewhere in the future and not just be a really cool standalone moment.
I think it will.
Especially with Ed's reaction, I think they're definitely they're
setting something up.
That was a building block. That was the foundation for their relationship. Mm-hmm. So
Ed became Oswald's nemesis while still being a good guy working for the police. That could set up some really neat scenes when Ed finally does become a villain. Mm-hmm. I really also for sure thought Bruce was going to either discover the Batcave or get frightened by a bat or both in those scenes, but neither one of those happens. I kind of wonder what the purpose of those scenes were. I really like that this show is about Gotham and not always about Batman, and that it doesn't always feel the need to check in on Bruce. Mm-hmm. And we can go long spans of episodes without a proto-Batman scene. Mm-hmm. I like that, and sure, by all means, show us some crucial Batman mythology moments, but it doesn't always have to be every week. And I really thought that these scenes weren't that at all. So I don't know. Curious to see what you think about it.
I think I don't know. I really love the Bruce and Alfred scenes. Like they're foundational, they're fundamental, but at the same time, the show can stand.
It could stand without them.
Definitely, when they were in Switzerland or whatever, the show proved it could stand on its own without having bringing them in every episode.
The only part that really bothered me about these scenes is we had no idea what this annual trip was, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't miss something because I was the second time I was purposely trying to pay attention to all dialogue and papers on the desk.
There were some rough context clues, like see the sunrise, stuff like that.
Right.
But I mean, it that kind of revealed itself throughout the episode too.
I don't know. It just felt like, why is he going on this trip? Why is he going now on this trip? And then you get that it's like an annual thing. I'm like, okay, but why is now the annual trip?
Actually, I don't think they've really done one yet, but I think it could have been appropriate to do even like a little flashback there showing them. Because, I mean, we've never got to see Bruce and his parents interact outside of walking down the alley right before they got shot.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see a flashback, or maybe they had taken a camera or something on the trip with them and they filmed the sunset or something.
See, that would be fine because I don't think they're going to do flashbacks
as
much
not.
As we kind of would like one or two flashbacks at least.
Yeah.
But something like that, like why? Watching video on a camera would be really nice just to see why, or get him like flipping through some scrapbook or an album or something,
or even just get an idea of what that relationship was like.
Yeah, because it definitely took a turn.
Sorry, Michael, go ahead.
Yes. Oh, you weren't done?
No, he's not.
And also, maybe your knowledge of Batman lore will help me understand this more, Bill.
Anne-Marie.
But how does this compare to the Scarecrow origin in the comics? I know he's obsessed with fear and uses it as a weapon, but is this sort of constant fear state something that comes from the comics, or is it unique to Gotham? Either way, it was interesting and also very disturbing. Anyway, can't wait to see, to hear the podcast and see what you all thought. Take care and have a great week.
Well, thank you then, Mike.
Yeah, and as far as the Scarecrow versus comics, we already went over the basic origins of a couple different versions of them up front. But as far as like the fear talks and having too much,
yeah.
Like a lot of Scarecrow stories end that way where he's like accidentally got exposed to the fear gas or gotten an overdose or something. And that's where they leave him in Arkham and then pick him back up 8 months later whenever he breaks out or whatever.
Interesting.
Once it's fixed. So yeah actually.
So off to Arkham he goes.
Well, the end of this episode definitely reminded me of a million Scarecrow stories because a lot of them end this way. You know, I'm not saying that's bad or anything. I'm saying actually that's good because the writers obviously know the source material.
Oh, yeah, so. They know what they're doing.
Okay, and last up here we have a voicemail from Woo, in the dinner letter and stuff. But
yeah.
Take it away, Woo.
I love the Scarecrow episode. I thought it was a great way of putting away Gerald Crane and establishing his son to be the Scarecrow later on. Felt very old school comic book to me in terms of, and Meeks will get this reference, the one bad day. Everything yes. goes normal.
I
everything's
even get
fine.
It.
Everything is awesome.
You did not too.
No, I'm just kidding. Until that one horrible day where everything goes wrong. I loved it because it didn't feel so far-fetched. Love Ben McKenzie's facial expressions, too, when he's dealing with Marina Baccarin's character, Lee. Love.
You know, I definitely think Ben McKenzie has really stepped it up the past couple episodes. And he's become, I think, more naturalistic in his performance than he was previously. And I think it's smoothed out a little bit. And I'm really starting to, like, love his performance. Where I loved the character before, now I'm really loving what Ben's doing with the character, too.
And I'm really curious what it was like on the OC, and I might have to bust out an episode or two.
I watched, like, a blooper reel
the
OC.
Did you watch a blooper reel?
Yeah, probably not.
Him trying to figure everything out. You can totally see that in his facial expressions after Lee kisses him. Love the stuff with Bruce. Loved how you see the beginnings of Batman trying to pull himself out of the darkness and make himself stronger. Love that he came up with his own brace to get up the hill. And I love the sweet stuff with Alfred, them bonding over the sunrise. I thought that was really cool. Loved Fish and her taking over that bunker she was locked into.
Bunker, yes.
And we really don't know, we still don't know where she is or what she's involved with. Love that same stuff with
We still know nothing about Fish.
We know
McCoy
nothing.
And Maroney, and I loved how they're mobsters, but they still behave like business partners. And I love how they bond over the torturing of that one really hard judge. I give this episode 5 adrenal glands out of 5.
Nice.
Talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
See, I told you adrenal glands were the
defeat.
Well, that scene when he was mashing them up was so disgusting.
Oh.
Yeah, basically.
Vomit. Absolute vomit.
Okay, Emery, you want to read this letter
yes,
we have?
Yes, I'll read this letter once I stop vomiting.
From Girlene.
All right. Hey, guys. First off, I would want to say that I love your podcast. It has become a ritual of mine to listen to it after watching the show. The whole structure of it is amazing, plus the amount of love, plus fun you guys have with the show is clearly evident. So keep up the great work. Why, thank you.
Yeah, and also big shout out to you because we've noticed you all over
the
our
place.
Stuff lately. And,
so,
and we definitely appreciate it. Glad to know we have a new fan.
Yes,
so.
Welcome, Smokin'. Now for the actual episode. It was amazing. It is truly one of my favorites because it was so fun to watch. The whole theme of fear in this episode was well executed. At first, I was wondering what was the point of seeing Bruce since we would see little clips of him and it didn't really impact the story as a whole. However, it wasn't until after Jonathan was injected with the fear potion that I realized the parallels with the two. Jonathan Crane has essentially become totally consumed with fear and is in no position to ask for help since he can't escape his nightmare. While both kids had no say in choosing to be in the fear-induced state, Crane being drugged and Wayne having his parents killed, Bruce has the ability to ask for help. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's something
that's really good.
In this episode too, they definitely Bruce and Jonathan Crane worked as counterpoints in a lot of different ways. And I mean, also, you know, Bruce was gaining a dad, Jonathan was losing a dad. The whole thing with the greatest fear, like, yeah, they were definitely playing them off of each other.
Yeah, and it went really well. This was evidence when he questioned Alfred why he couldn't come to help him. It's a really interesting parallel because in Crane's situation, his father left him there. But in Bruce's situation, while he doesn't have his biological father, he does have a father figure in Alfred and even Jim to some extent. Sorry, this is getting long, so I'll stop there. I tend to go on and on when I'm talking about shows.
It's fine.
But for last comments, the highlight of the episode for me was definitely Penguin meeting Nigma. That just reminded me of another fear parallel with Penguin this time, but I'll save that for another time. Regardless, enjoy the rest of your day. Greediness.
Yeah, also at
underscore
GINNIII on Twitter. Yeah, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's always nice to hear compliments.
Definitely, and we'll see you on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, a couple tweets to round us out here. Win Mercer, at Win Mercer, said, loving the mobster faction chess game, Falcone, Maroni, Penguin, Fish on Gotham. Bruce and Alfred are too weird for me. And then
Win.
And then Batfleck. At unique underscore Janique says, who cared about this episode after we saw who was quite possibly baby Joker? Little Joker. Look at this little Joker. And after you look at this little Joker, and you're vomiting all over yourself, obviously.
Enough with the vomit.
Just crawl down the hallway. It's okay, because you don't want to bump into those walls. They're bumpy, right?
They're bumpy.
And you know, then just kind of like scoot down the steps one at a time. Then get into that computer chair next week after you watch the episode and email us legendsofgotham@gmail.com. Tweet us at Legends of Gotham. The Facebook is facebook.com/Legends of Gotham. And the voicemail number is 424-274-2352. Again, that's 424-274-2352. Now, Emery, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at AMDSimone. And I blog about food stuff and crafty stuff over at crunchycrafty.com.
And as for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Bill Meeks. You can, obviously, we've mentioned it a couple times this episode, get my books at dogboyadventures.com. And you can check out our new podcast we've been doing, which is really good. This week's episode is about vacation. So we'll be watching National Lampoon's Vacation. So if you want to hear us talk about that, universebox.com. And we'll stream it at youtube.universebox.com live Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. EST. Well,
so, yeah.
That was good. I have no emotions. I am a robot. What? Why are you looking at me like that? Like I'm doing something weird.
You are weird.
Join
Until
us next week
time,
for more
Legends of Gotham. Legends of Gotham.
Oil.
You turned it off a while ago.
I did.